Empire Lines uncovers the unexpected, often two-way, flows of empires through art. Interdisciplinary thinkers use individual artworks as artifacts of imperial exchange, revealing the how and why of the monolith empire. In this episode, A. Bastian navigates the commercial and Christian aspirations of Euro-American trading empires in 19th century Asia. Through a water splotch from the Bay of Bengal in Levi Savage's ship diary.
In 1853, the grand ship Monsoon hugs the glistening Bay of Bengal to the east of India. It was the glimmering thoroughfare for maritime traders traveling to or from the city of Kolkata, then Calcutta, the meeting point of the British and Mughal empires. Great headwinds press against the ship, resisting its voyage. Yet, though not native to the bay, the ship's savvy captain, Windsor, sails seamlessly through. The Monsoon was a Euro-American, square-rigged, three-masted ship built in Bath, Maine, on the American continent in 1851. Its name infers its intention to voyage through areas known for monsoons, including the Bay of Bengal. The fact that Maine's shipbuilders named their seafaring timbers after a weather pattern not native to their own region reveals how the monsoon was meant for the logistics of an American expansion of British Empire. Built on another continent thousands of miles away, it reveals how the United States controlled a portion of the long-distance trade in the service of imperial wealth-building. Looking at the diary of the former passenger Levi Savage, stained with a water splotch from the Bay of Bengal, deepens our understanding of the role of maritime trade between both empires in the 19th century. From the bow of the Monsoon, this instance of inter-imperial contact seems to fit the typical patterns of European settlement, subjection, and usurping of lands, peoples, and supply chains. But both the painting and the water splotch reveal Asian traders' power to attract and indirectly incentivize the construction of a European delivery network, and how this view failed to fully foresee the Europeans' growing thirst for land and tax grabs and government in South Asia. By 1853, the British East India Company still technically administered trade and government for the British in Calcutta. During the colonial period, the East India Company had subdued the previous Mughal dynasty and its influences in the area. But by the mid-1850s, the company had lost most of its independence from the crown. Looking to profit from this potential power vacuum, it appears that Americans aimed to take advantage of the existing British colonial networks of trade for their own commercial imperial expansion. Asian shipbuilders in the region did not necessarily intend or want to directly compete with European supply lines. Many Asian investors focused within the region for different preferences with less focus on distant trade. This was due to governing policies and the added costs of protecting their investments. European traders were comparatively willing to take on these risks and absorb the costs to deliver goods and services and manage logistics from distant lands. To some degree, it was beneficial for the Asian investors to let them. This depiction of the monsoon exposes these dynamics of danger and expenditure avoidance by Asian traders in the region. In America, Maine shipbuilders outfitted the ship at a considerable cost in time, talent, and treasure so that it would round the globe to trade in Calcutta in 1853. Meanwhile, Asian traders never duplicated these efforts to reach the Americas for the same connection. Diaries written aboard the ship reveal how, to fund this adventure, the monsoon needed to sail to Calcutta and return via New Bedford, Massachusetts, within a very tight window to beat out other competition and presumably fetch higher prices. Captain Windsor also picked up at least 13 paying passengers in San Francisco, likely another attempt to offset the expense. The monsoon speedily sailed 50 days from San Francisco to Singapore in 1853. But due to headwinds, it crossed the Bay of Bengal much slower than anticipated, taking 35 days, more than half that time. Captain Windsor left no records indicating whether this delay affected the timetable projected by his business partners, but it was likely concerning. Similarly, we don't know if the ship's cargo or passengers benefited or exploited Asian commerce in any way. Certainly, any impact on the people in Calcutta and South Asia was at least uneven. The little that we do know about the monsoon comes from the diary written by Levi Savage, one of those 13 passengers picked up in San Francisco. And in it, there is another depiction of the monsoon, which deepens our understanding of these global and interconnected supply chains. In the early 1840s, Levi Savage and his family left their farm in Ohio to join the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, better known as the Mormons, a sect of Christianity in Nauvoo, Illinois. Along with his family, he trekked to the Great Salt Lake Valley in Utah Territory, where he then accepted a call to proselytize as a missionary in Siam, what we know now as Thailand. When he could not find a direct route to Bangkok, he traveled aboard the monsoon to Calcutta. The likes of Savage presented another type of risk aboard these ships facing the Asians of Calcutta. He was one of many people who appropriated these Euro-American trade routes to spread their religion and worldviews in locations where they lacked context. Savage's comments in his diary reveal how long-distance voyages influenced the views of Euro-Americans toward Asians. On his way up the Hooghly River in Calcutta, he remarks on his reaction to what he saw beyond the bow of the monsoon, all of which presented to us a peculiar but pleasing prospect, the beauties of which perhaps were more enhanced by our just arriving from a long voyage at sea. In other words, long voyages with sea and sky vistas may have contributed to their reactions upon arrival at their destinations. This included their tendency to exoticize Asians as distant and separate from their own lives and experiences. Asians, by contrast, were also influenced by the mode in which these Europeans and Euro-Americans arrived on their shores. In return, they may have viewed these arriving passengers as rootless, without context, and highly individualistic, as many, like Levi Savage, came without their families. At the end of Levi Savage's first journal, a significant water splotch emanates from the bottom edge of the spine. On this page, splashed by the Bay of Bengal, he describes his departure from Calcutta, this time on the steamship Fire Queen. In 1853, the Fire Queen regularly delivered mail and other goods between Calcutta and Rangoon, where the British were at war with Burma, now known as Yangon, in Myanmar. Savage and his partner, Elam Luddington, had purchased the cheapest deck passages, allowing nature a chance to imprint the page. This splash thus suggests how this diary offers a rare glimpse of a non-elite and non-literati Euro-American perspective on board. According to Savage, other passengers from South Asia, luggage, and cargo crammed the deck amidst livestock fluttering, squawking, bleating, and oinking. Savage describes a fearful storm. The causes behind smudges, stains, and liquid markings in texts are not always clear, but the evidence of this water splotch points to the shifting monsoon winds and storms off the Bay of Bengal because of Levi Savage's location on the exposed deck, his habit of daily writing, and the continuation of his writings about the storm in a new journal the next day. Even with several soaked pages, his writing remains legible until this very last page, number 157. At this point, it seems that the rain began dousing, or the water seeped onto his diary, preventing him from finishing the page. Unlike our previous visual, a painting frozen in time, the diary's non-textual elements tell us about movements on the ship. Its imprints verify that it was wet, but given that it only covers a portion of the page, Savage might have been under some sort of cover, a privilege not afforded to his fellow South Asian passengers, and then he set or dropped the diary in a damp patch. Still, its size suggests that the deluge was either from quite a downpour or perhaps the rush of water as the deck tilted to and fro, marks of a dangerous journey caused by the demand and occasional lapses of knowledge in managing shipping from afar in imperial trade. Savage details the ship's turmoil and his internal thoughts, taking the reader from the macro view of empire to its immediate and individual experience. Though Savage shares other South Asian status on deck as people who cannot afford a covered passage, he does not write as if he is one among them. Instead, he writes as a distant observer with a tendency towards condescension, even towards his other white contemporaries, like his companion Luddington. In fact, he barely writes about Luddington at all, perhaps taking him for granted or seeing his experience as an extension of his own. A diary from one of the South Asians on board might not have featured Savage and Luddington at all, though. White people were a more normal part of their lives, especially given that they traveled aboard these European steamships. But sharing a deck passage with Euro-Americans may have been less common for them. Over these stained pages, Savage writes with poor grammar that the other deck passengers have piled themselves up in the of the deck between the two wheelhouses, but all could not shove themselves here and were obliged to take the brunt of the storm, and the outsiders fared but little better. They reminded me of a parcel of hogs and pigs crawling up onto each other to screen themselves from the... And here is where the writing becomes indecipherable. Ble King Ain, or B-L-E, King, A-Y-N-E. He might have meant blinking rain, and certainly blinking through the rain might have slowed his pen enough to break up the spelling of those three words. Here again, the non-textual markings imply the movements of imperial interchange, both of the falling rain and Savage's blinking eyelashes. Savage's several spelling and grammar mistakes highlight how his relative social status may not have differed much from the South Asians he describes. Savage's racist animalization of South Asian passengers as hogs and pigs would likely have escaped any description of white people in the same condition. Though he had a habit of quipping smugly, nowhere else in his diaries does he compare white people to anything but people. Savage's passage also shows how South Asians sometimes took European rather than Asian ships across the bay. They could have traveled aboard the Fire Queen on a regular basis. South Asian captains may not have traveled as often to Burma in 1853 due to the ongoing war in the region, or perhaps without the demands of timely schedules, South Asian captains deliberately avoided the monsoons, recognizing that the winds had not yet fully reversed course. In both cases, this highlights the superior local knowledge of the South Asian captains over the European seafarers. At further distances, South Asians more often traveled in extended families. As a result, captains did not offer as many individual passages, especially where Europeans filled that need. If South Asian vessels were available for individuals, perhaps it was the particular timing, availability, price, or specific perks of a European ship that informed their choice. Local Asian passengers and investors could not determine the ship's construction, route, timing, nor whether it would risk the winds. However, they also may not have ventured in this direction, in this way, or at this frequency had Europeans not broken the local norms of maritime trade and travel. Ironically, by using the existing networks, he could not reach Siam directly, so Savage also expanded American exposure to South Asia. This is an example, then, of the logistics of European empire also expanding Asian ambitions, exposure, and networks. The Fire Queen fortunately weathered the storm. Ultimately, all the Fire Queen's passengers returned home alive. The merchants of the monsoon were less fortunate. This was the only trip to Asia or the Bay of Bengal. After changing hands to the Norwegians, the monsoon was eventually stranded off the coast of Newry in the UK in 1877. Both this painting and the water splotch highlight how South Asians and Americans often relied on Europeans to invest and take risks in new maritime routes. But this came at the price to Asians of misunderstandings and racism during these encounters and beyond. Both works frame the Euro-American story of Asia, but also the individuals affected by British and Mughal empires moving together over the Bay of Bengal, each changing through contact with the other.
Empire Lines is produced by Yelena Sofronievich. For more episodes, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.